Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam. Welcome to this week's edition of Conversations with Creative Waco. We are a fourth Friday feature on KWBU, and on months like this one, a fifth Friday too. Stay with me for conversations with creatives and community leaders making an impact on our artistic and cultural sector. We have three guests joining us today. First, we're chatting with Stephanie Wheat Johnson to hear about all things artpreneurship. In the second half of the episode, you will hear from Cindy Millard and Eric Linares on how the Mayborn Museum and Syntex Hispanic Chamber have joined forces to honor Hispanic heritage. Also, an installment of David and Art is included in today's program. To kick off the show, we welcome Stephanie Wheat Johnson, Creative Waco's Artpreneurship Project Manager. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, Steph, can you give us some background on what Artpreneurship is and how this program began in our community?
Sure. So this is year three for us, working in the Artpreneurship program. The genesis of it was actually a civic trip. Some leaders from Waco visited Cincinnati a few years back and were struck by all these beautiful large-scale murals that they saw throughout the city. From there, they discovered that this was all part of a program called Cincinnati Artworks, and they were very inspired. Got to talking with the leadership there. Those people came to Waco and led a fantastic workshop about that. And I happened to be there, as did several of the creatives who got involved with our pilot project. The gist of how we have shaped Artpreneurship is we always say that while we're known for our beautiful murals, that is actually a byproduct of the true value of the program. The program is a workforce development program, and it is targeted at our high school age young creatives in Waco. For the last 3 years, we've been really lucky to team up with Waco ISD and work through their summer internship program in order to hire in anywhere from 10 to this year 14.
Nice.
Yes. 14 talented high schoolers, rising juniors and seniors normally. And it is a paid internship opportunity for them. Along with hiring all these wonderful young creatives in, we also hire in from mostly regional artists, Wacoan artists, who become art mentors. And they lead the program. It's usually about 8 weeks long. It's a little bit longer with COVID, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
We've stretched that to make sure that we are safe and doing all the right things to support everyone. But over the span of that time, they lead a project from concept to completion. So our apprentices and our artists get the whole scale of a project, understanding every single piece in there. And at the end, we have the product of the mural. This year, we also are introducing film and some individual design projects for our apprentices.
I know. I can't wait to talk about that a little later.
Yes.
So this is year three, and typically in the past two summers, this has been a summer program, summer internship program.
Yep.
But, you know, yay COVID, this is our first time doing it in concert with the school year. So can you talk a little bit about the adjustments that you mentioned earlier that we've made for this year's program?
Like so many organizations are dealing with right now, a few months back, we weren't even sure that we would have our apprenticeship this year because we were just trying to gauge what would be wise, considering that we're hiring in young creatives who are of the high school age. And so we knew that we would not do a summer program because we really wanted to make sure that we had the right resources and did a little testing to see how things would flow. Fortunately, over the summer, the thing we were able to do, we had the opportunity to team up with The Cove, which is a homeless nurture center for teens in our city. In that process, we developed a program, a sort of test program of how to do a virtual studio process where we worked with some young creatives, young apprentices at The Cove, and they developed the mural and then were able to paint it in a way that was social distancing friendly. Is that
right?
The term?
Yeah. So in past years, we've had so many awesome clients that we've worked with, The Cove, Brotherwell, Family Health Center, Turner Behringer. I don't think we've publicly announced who this year's client is and
you
where
know,
it is.
That's true. I think this might be the first official time we've
shared
that.
So would you like to make the introduction?
Oh, is there a drum roll?
Yeah.
So we have been really fortunate to partner with TFNB, Your Bank for Life, this year. So the leadership at TFNB is making a wonderful investment in the community of East Waco, and they purchased a couple of buildings that are on Elm Avenue. It's really funny because one of those buildings I have had my eye on for 2 years, actually. So when Jason Lavender and some of the other team members came to us and said, we really would love to invest in our apprenticeship this year, and I figured out which walls they were, I did a little happy dance, actually. So there are two properties that eventually we will execute murals on, the first being on 713 Elm. It's a building that was, I think, at one point a CrossFit gym. Mm-hmm. I think it's obviously over the years had several other identities. I think originally it was actually a grocery store. So we're really excited about delving into that. We are in the process of learning a lot about the history behind that building and engaging with the community so that the process is really a rich one for everyone involved.
So our apprenticeship naturally is a collaborative process, like not only through the apprentices and artist mentors and the clients, but also with the community. Can you speak a little bit more about how we're doing the community engagement in times when we can't really hold in-person events like how we've done it in the past?
Right. Yeah. So we have been fortunate in past years, I think, with a combination of great things. We've had wonderful sponsors and our, as we say sometimes, mural wall donors who have said, we get that this is an investment in the community, and it can't really happen without community engagement. We understand that we may own this building now, but we haven't always. And, you know, when you start a big, visually striking project like that that is shared, it's a public art project, you need to take all these other, things into consideration. So we have developed a process in the last couple of years of community engagement where we try to reach out to leaders within the neighborhood we're painting. For example, this year we have partnered with City Center Waco. We've been very blessed by the Elm Avenue Steering Group. We've also been able to reach out just to community leaders that have been in that area who know the deeper history of East Waco. Mm-hmm. We're really lucky this year in our designers. They've actually gotten really involved in that process and have done some in-person interviews, or should I say socially distance friendly interviews.
Right.
The other piece that we're working on and growing right now is finding a way to have an open forum in some sense in a virtual way. We're looking at doing that, as you know, through the utilities we're all using right now, like Facebook Live, and also opening up some surveys in different ways so that people who are from East Waco who hear out the project feel like they can contribute, because that's what it's about. And it's such a blessing for our apprentices who might not know a thing about the wall they're painting before they step in. And hopefully they come out of it not only having had this, you know, I have these artistic skills in my back pocket now, but they know something more about the city that they live in.
Yeah. So throughout the years, each program has had their own challenges. Mm-hmm. But what has been one of your favorite memories about this program thus far?
Oh, goodness. This year?
In general.
Or in general.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's so funny. I think often the most satisfying memories for me are ones that really center around our apprentices, especially when we have moments where they just sort of finally kind of push through that sort of innate shyness that not only young people have, but honestly a lot of creatives have when they first collaborate. There's kind of a wall that you have to gently push through, but once you get past that point, oh my goodness, it's so rewarding to see that happen. I mean, for me, getting out on the wall and seeing, you know, the mural traced off and the paint hitting the wall is just fabulous. And then seeing community members drive by, stop by, ask about the program, those are really special memories.
Yeah. So for anyone who would like to, you know, get involved and support the program, what's a couple easy ways they can do that?
Okay. So in the world of social distancing that we now live in, there are still some really great ways to engage. One would be really, simple. It's a click of a button, and that's donating. And this does not have to be like, I'm donating millions of dollars, although I will thank you for it personally. You know, if you have $20 that you want to put towards the program, amazing. I know that it may not seem like a lot in some ways, but what that really does is it builds up our fund where we can actually pay our apprentices and our artists and make sure that this is a program where they can really grow and push their boundaries. Other ways that we can support, we're always looking for business sponsors, people who maybe they want to bring breakfast to the kids when they're painting the walls. We're always looking for masterclass leaders too. So people who want to come and speak on whatever their realm of experience is in, you know, whether it might be I'm an entrepreneur in the community, maybe you're an educator, maybe you're just someone who has lived here a long time and you know some specific history that you want to share.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Stephanie, and giving us this awesome update.
Oh, it's my delight.
You can follow and connect with Art Apprenticeship on Facebook and Instagram at Art Apprenticeship. That's Art Apprenticeship. Or donate to the program at creativewaco.org/artapprenticeship. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org, and you can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode.
This is 103.3 Waco Public Radio, KWBU. Potentially controversial images have caused a 4-year delay in a highly anticipated art exhibit. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art.
Last week, I talked about an artist named Philip Guston whose remarkable career took him from realism to abstract expressionism, but then, when he was almost 60, he shocked the art world by going back to representationalism. As soon as he made the change, a curious cast of characters began to populate Guston's new style. Indeed, one of the most distinctive features of his new work was the appearance of hooded figures that looked like they could be members of the Ku Klux Klan. They're not represented as people, not exactly. They're portrayed simply as cartoonish but vaguely menacing hoods and hands. One critic explained that in abandoning abstraction and embracing a depiction of the Klan, Guston was facing down an evil that he first saw as a young Jewish boy in Los Angeles. Another said that his hooded figures were emblems of human blindness, dishonesty, and malevolence. In June 2019, a group of 4 prestigious museums announced that a major new retrospective of Guston's work, the first in 15 years, would be going to Washington, D.C., Boston, Houston, and finally London. But not now. Late last month, the directors of those museums said that it was being postponed. After a great deal of reflection and extensive consultation, they said, we are postponing the exhibit until a time at which we think that the powerful message of social and racial justice that is at the center of Philip Guston's work can be more clearly interpreted. The reaction from the art world was swift and overwhelmingly negative. A former curator at the Museum of Modern Art called the decision cowardly and an insult to art and the public alike. New York Times reporter Jason Farrago said that today's museum leaders have grown risk-averse to a degree that edges into censoriousness, and their fear has spread from the boardroom to the gallery walls. Guston's daughter was likewise put out and said, these paintings meet the moment we are in today. The danger is not in looking at Philip Guston's work, but in looking away. Critic Lee Rosenbaum is among those who understands why the curators took the step they did, calling the decision regrettable but necessary. It certainly isn't a cowardly act of censorship, she said. It's a matter of responsible stewardship during a time of volatile protests that have sometimes turned violent and destructive. The show's authoritative catalog is already available in museum stores, or at least it was. It's still available on Amazon.com, and it looks fantastic. If you've not seen the work of Philip Guston, and his is not exactly a household name, I know, go online and take a look at some of his works from every stage of his career, and you'll see some surprising things from a thoughtful artist. And consider whether you think a museum should take on an exhibit that features them.
You can hear David and Art every Monday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on KWBU. You're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. With me now is Cindy Millard, who serves as the Public Engagement Manager at the Mayborn Museum, and local entrepreneur Eric Linares. Cindy and Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So first, I'd like to briefly talk about the Mayborn Museum. So Eric, you know, don't feel bad for a second. We're going to come back to you. So the Mayborn is one of Waco's staples, and I remember visiting, you know, on school trips when I was younger. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of museum the Mayborn is and the type of exhibits that you all host?
The Mayborn Museum has been around since 2004, so we're 16 years old, and we are, you know, out in the community doing a lot of different things. We've kind of in the past been known mainly as a children's museum because a lot of school groups would come, and that's kind of how they know us. Within the last 4 to 5 years, we've been trying to expand our audience and do more adult programming, which is what I get to do, which is wonderful. And then, as we were talking before with Eric, what we're trying to do in the last 2.5 years have been to expand into different communities within Waco. And I think we're trying to do a really good job. But this is one of the most exciting ones that I've been a part of so far. But working with Eric was a big part of it.
Yeah. So what's the process for choosing either what kind of special exhibits you're doing and what kind of staple and main exhibits that you guys host?
Okay. The museum as a whole, they try to be for all ages and, you know, all different types of people, but also the age group. And they're trying to expand beyond being known as a children's museum and going to other areas. So the exhibits that they have, we've got one now, Paw Patrol Adventure.
And that's really big with the kids.
It is very big with the kids and with the families that have small children. But then we've got other ones. We've got a dinosaur one coming this next summer, which will be kind of for people of all ages. And so it'll be a really good thing for that. And then as far as the other exhibits we do, we've got a Baylor 175th exhibit that is wonderful on Baylor's history and different things going on. And then this one is one of our smaller displays, but it is purposely meant for all community members to be able to see themselves there.
Like we mentioned, one of your current special exhibits focus on honoring Hispanic heritage as our community continues to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. So part of that celebration includes an ofrendo that has ties with the Dia de los Muertos holiday. Eric, can you explain a little bit more about what this whole collection of events is?
Dia de los Muertos, I think, is one of those you know, very, very, you know, visual holidays that people really look at, and they see all these skulls and everything. They see all these, everybody's dressed up and everybody like has all these amazing food and everything. But this is a really good opportunity to partner with the museum because it allows a more educational aspect to it. Because Dia de los Muertos is, in fact, a celebration of life, not of death. Mm-hmm. It's a celebration that honors our ancestors, our heritage. It gives us an opportunity to remember our loved ones as they were in life, as they existed with us. And so it's very, very integral part of the Mexican culture that has never really been at this kind of a pedestal now, at this kind of a visual, you know, cultural level. And I'm really excited to see that happen and see that happen more with, you know, organizations like the Mayborn Museum that are really trying to reach out and showcase the communities and the cultures that exist in this area. So, Dia de los Muertos is a beautiful opportunity to bring and bridge those cultures together.
Yes, so back when we were able to have festivals and things, we typically have certain things that we celebrate throughout the year as a community, but has Dia de los Muertos been celebrated as a whole community in the past?
I think that there it has been, you know, little installations, little beautiful installations, you know, that celebrate. But I think when you do events like the festival that I did last year, that is it's a free festival, a large gathering of people, you know, you really invite all kinds of people to come be a part of it and experience a little snippet of that culture and that history. And I think, you know, doing things like that really, really adds to the value of you know, a community and a culture.
Yeah. So, Cindy, can you talk a little bit more about how this partnership between the Mayborn and the Hispanic Chamber came to be and how it aligns with the mission of what the Mayborn is doing right now?
As we began planning for our strategic plan that will be through 2023, we started thinking of what different areas we needed to pocket. And one of them was community involvement and community engagement. And that's something that we had done well in the past through schools and through other areas, but not necessarily reaching out to other groups. So we did an intensive study on 9 different groups in the Waco area, nonprofits, and one of them was the Syntex Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And we met Alfred Solano and Nalissa, who really runs the place. I'm going to make sure Alfred knows about this. Yes,
we love having them on the show, too.
But anyway, he's helped us with a lot of different things. But when we were doing our interview with him, he brought out so many wonderful, just a lot of information about the culture, the Hispanic culture, and how the museum might be able to reach out to that community and serve them a little bit better and help them see themselves when they come to the museum. And so that's something that we've been working on, and he's the one that gave me Eric's name, and the rest is history.
Right on. So why are partnerships like this important to, like, the growth and development of our community?
Oh, do you want to take that?
You know, I'm a very big proponent of collaboration and between all kinds of things. It's something that, you know, we work so hard to create anything and to build anything. When we are able to collaborate and build off of each other's successes, build off of each other's knowledge and everything, and it reaches the momentum that you couldn't really achieve by yourself. And that's something that I've seen very, very often in the Waco community especially. And it's something that keeps me here, something that attracted me to this. You know, after I graduated from Baylor, it made me stay here because I knew that this place had that communication, that collaboration that was amazing. It's the only way to really ensure you have a cohesive community and real good momentum and growth for the future.
Yeah.
And this was just an instance where I kind of put it out in the universe that I was looking for an Ofrenda display, and Eric was really trying to find a place to put it because he wasn't able to do the same thing he did last year. And so it was really just one of those things that, you know, we put it out there and we found the people and we got to collaborate with each other.
Yeah, that's what I really like about how Waco is really, I mean, like you mentioned, being collaborative right now, but it just shows how small and tight-knit our community is. Like, we're connected more than we even know at this point. Like, you just put it out there and, you know, Waco just makes it happen.
Yeah,
so I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of this event. So the Ofrenda is open to the public now. How can community members interact with the display and honor their loved ones, and what can they expect when they go and visit the Mayborn?
Let me give you the hardcore stuff first, and then you're going to go with the emotion part of it because it's really good. But at the museum, it's the Ofrenda is actually located. So it's a display, like an exhibit that you would go in and see it in any museum, but it's also going to be interactive. So we want people to bring photos of their loved ones and leave them there and think about them and think about their lives and celebrate their lives while they're there. Bring small little mementos that remind them of their loved one to be a part of it. The location is right inside the door. We'd love for you to come to the museum and see the rest of the museum, but if your intent is to only come to the Ofrenda, it's there for you, you know. And we're going to be, masks are required and the 6-foot distancing, and we're very much sticklers on that, but we make it happen and keep everyone safe. But by having that, that's just the simple mechanics of when you come in, what you can expect. A beautiful thing. We're also going to have a video screen with 3 videos that Eric, of course, has helped us put together on the history of Dia de los Muertos and the construction of the Ofrenda. So it'll be a little bit more informational and educational as far as that goes.
Yeah, so like she said, we're going to have a lot of ways that the public can interact with the Ofrenda. And that's the whole purpose of it. It's a community Ofrenda. Typically an Ofrenda would only be located in a house and it would celebrate just the individuals that were from that family. But it's really beautiful to see an entire city coming together and really celebrate their families as a whole. And so we want people to take this opportunity to showcase their loved ones, to live and to cherish that, you know, that memory of who they were, you know, and doing it together from people of all backgrounds. You know, this isn't just only one type of people can come. You know, we want to celebrate all of our ancestors. We want to use this culture, this event to really, you know, capture that, you know, make sure that everyone has the opportunity to take part in this, you know, this beautiful festival, this beautiful, you know, thing.
Yes. So the Ofrenda opened on the 15th, right? And how long will it be on display at your museum?
It will be on display through November 8th. And the reasoning behind that is that Dia de los Muertos is actually November 1st and 2nd.
Correct.
Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so we want people to be able to, through that time, bring things and interact with the display as it is, but then have time to enjoy the full experience.
Yeah.
It's an evolving artwork. It's something that isn't, it's not an exhibit to where it's, you go and you're part of it. Mm-hmm. And so we give them that space because we want the entire community to create this at the same time. And so when it gets to the first and the second, we can really experience it, and then we can experience it for longer. And that's the amazing part of having that collaboration with a location like the Mayborn Museum.
Yeah. So with the mementos that people drop off in honor of their loved ones, what happens afterwards? Do they come back and pick them up, or
We will have a sticker on the back so they will know what it was, and they're welcome to come back and pick it up, or we will ask them if they'd rather us just keep it on file.
Because one of the things the Mayborn really wants to do is we want to make this a recurring thing. And so this, this ability to have their loved ones forever, always being a part of this, and that's an amazing thing that I think would be really cool to see.
Yeah, well, awesome. I can't wait to stop by. Thank you so much, Cindy and Eric, for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
Thank you.
The Ofrenda will be open to the public at the Mayborn Museum until November 8th. You can find more information about the full lineup of events honoring Hispanic heritage on the Mayborn's Facebook and Instagram, or at baylor.edu/Mayborn. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch the next episode on Friday, November 27th for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWVU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.